Howdy, everybody. How's everybody doing? I know we're like getting towards the end, like getting a little bit worn down. I grabbed some coffees. I strongly recommend that little like espresso refill thing. Like, that's pretty awesome. Totally should go and do that if you haven't done that. Hopefully it'll work. If I fall into a coma like 10 minutes into this thing, it's because the coffee is like in the sugar is now crashed. So we'll see. So hopefully you're here for less alarming alerts. I am Robert Treat. That's the talk I'm going to do, so we'll see how that goes. Want to talk a little bit about alarms and alerting and getting paged and whatnot. Out of curiosity, how many of you are on call like right now? So still got a few out in the crowd. Okay. So let me talk a little bit about where I'm coming from and sort of the genesis of the talk. I've done a lot of tech over my career at this point. Done web development and sysadmin stuff and worked as a DBA and been involved in all that kind of stuff. And now at this point, like, I've done enough damage. They have promoted me to where I can do no more damage. And they basically, like, their goal now, the rest of the organization, is to keep me away from the systems so that I don't break anything else. And that's cool. Like, I guess I don't have too much problems with that. You may ask yourself, so like a CEO talking about like alerts, and I don't even work at like PagerDuty or something, right? Like, I'm just like a person who does tech stuff. And so I'm not really trying to like sell a thing. Why am I talking about alerts? Why do I care about this subject at all? Why do I think you need to care about this subject? And of course, it does come back to me on some level. How many people are familiar with the idea of like phantom pages, right? So so when I say phantom pages, it's like the, you know, you're awake and you feel something like on your leg vibrating maybe, and you go to look and you're like, oh, there's no pager there. Like, what? Oh, I'm not even on call. Like, what just happened there? Phantom pages is a problem, and it kind of got me thinking about this. And I'll take a quick stroll down memory lane about how like I got into on-call and all that. My first sort of experiences with on-call as a thing and wanting it to be a thing was this guy named Benny. And I was working as like a sort of technical support rep. And there was a guy who ran around, did networks and whatnot. And he had like three pagers on his like belt and whatever. His name was Benny, and he was like better looking than me and like had a better job and like had these pagers. So I knew he was more important and everything. I was like, someday I hope to be that guy, right? Like, I hope that I can do stuff that's important, have an important enough job that people will give me like a pager so they can call me. They will want my help that badly, right? And they will just come and like, Robert, please come and help save our systems. And that's all I really wanted in life. Right, and so I sort of strove and I learned as much as I could. I learned more about systems and programming, all that jazz, you know. And eventually, like, I got my pager, right? And I was like, now I do stuff that's important, right? Like, now I'm like a real person here. So I thought that was great for some reason, right? I felt some sort of satisfaction that I had an important job and systems relied on me and people thought I was important. And you do that for like a number of years. And then I don't know how many of you found yourself in this position where you find out, like, at some point, not only are you in an on-call rotation, you're actually in more than one on-call rotation, like, at the same time, right? And that gets really weird because you're, like, trying to figure out, like, how do you juggle, like, anything other than just being on-call, right, and responding to stuff? And what do you do when, like, two pages come in at the same time? And how do you resolve those problems? And so I found myself in that sort of line of things. It was for different systems and whatnot. You know, did that for a number of years, realized like, this is like really overload. This is like problematic. And that phantom page thing started to happen to me. And maybe it would have ended there, but what really struck me was, you know, at some point, like, I sort of got out of on-call rotations, like started doing this exact thing and all that. And when you're in this role, it's like, well, people have my phone number, everyone in the company has it. Like, if there's a problem, they will call me. But I'm not actually in a rotation anymore, right? I'm not on call. Like, I'm not sitting there waiting to see if something's gonna happen. And years had gone by since I had been in on call, and yet I would still get phantom pages, right? Like, I would be sitting at a stoplight and I would feel the damn pager go off in my leg. And I'm like, oh, let me, what? And again, I was like, why do I get this? I'm not even on call. Like, I couldn't possibly get paged, and yet here it is. I feel like there's something paging me. And so that was like, you know, that sort of hit my core. And I started thinking about this more and more. And now, you know, I manage the SRE team at OmniTI. So I have people underneath me now who are sort of working on these systems, who are in on-call rotations, who have to deal with this. And I think, like, you know, I guess I want the next generation to have it better than me or something. Like, if I can stop phantom pages from happening to them, like, maybe I will have done some good in the world, right? It's not a big dream, but, you know, you got to have something. So, and of course, we're hiring in case anyone needs another job. Like everybody else here, we are also hiring. So if you want to talk about that later, we can talk about that. I do have a philosophy on paging in that I think paging is actually useful. I've talked to other companies out there, and we kind of do like IT services kind of work at OmniTI. And my philosophy has always been like paging is good because you kind of want to know when things are broken, when they're out of tolerance, and that kind of thing. And so I sort of advocate, like, I think this is a good model in general as long as you do it correctly, right? I've had competitors say, like, you know, do a 24/7 type system, and that's way better because when your stuff breaks, like, there's somebody who's right there, like, just ready to deal with the broken thing. And I always thought, like, well, like, I don't want something broken being like just a regular day at the office, right? Like, it shouldn't be somebody's job to come in and see what's going to break today and then sort of resolve it for the next shift to then also work on that broken thing and let it, you know, just sort of fester on down. Like, you should strive to not actually have broken systems. And so paging is sort of like a wake-up call that, like, yes, you need to do a little bit more for that. So for those of you who have been in an on-call rotation, I'm pretty sure you've all sort of experienced this problem, right? It's where you get that alert and you sort of ignore it, and you look at, like, your pager or you look at, like, your phone or whatever, and you're just like, oh yeah, I know that alert. Like, I'm pretty sure that's going to clear in, like, 5 minutes. I'm not going to worry about it. Just go back to, like, watching TV or playing video games or whatever. And usually it does clear, right? Like, that's fine. That usually does happen that way. Because you start to realize, like, which things are going to actually be real problems and which ones aren't. I would ask also, for those of you that are in an on-call rotation, ask yourself a question about the alerts that you get, right? How many of those alerts did you get that were actually not actionable, right? There was actually nothing you could do. Maybe you got, like, an alert on, like, NTP saying, like, oh, the times are out of sync or something, right? And so, yes, you could log into the system and run NTP update, maybe, and that might solve it. Maybe that's critical for you. It could be, right? But in a lot of cases, like, well, it'll alert, and if you actually do nothing, it'll actually just fix itself, right? Because NTP is kind of designed for that. Or, like, you'll get something where, like, there's an absence of a metric that's coming up, and so it's like, oh, maybe I should go look. Like, that server didn't respond to, like, the last ping or whatever, right? And then you're like, if I don't do anything for 5 minutes, like, it'll probably ping, and it'll probably come back, and it does, right? So you don't really have to do anything to fix that. And you can get into these, like, weird sort of rationalizations where you're like, you're on call, and those are the pages that you want, right? And you're like, oh, man, I hope that every page that I get, like, I don't actually have to do anything. It just resolves itself, and I'll be so happy. And you'll go in the next day and talk to your coworkers and be like, oh, yeah, I got paged, like, 3 times last night, but I didn't actually have to do anything, so it was cool, you know? And it's like, wait a minute, what are you trying to convince yourself of here, right? Like, why is that cool that you got paged 3 times and you didn't have to do anything? So I think paging is useful, right? But really, I guess what I mean by that is paging can be useful, but you actually have to do it the right way, right? And one of the things that I see time and time again, because I work in consulting, I meet with a lot of different companies, I talk to a lot of different engineers, go to conferences and talk to folks, and, you know, there just is sort of this general lack of real focus on this as a problem. And so part of what I look at is, like, well, how could people improve this if they wanted to? And hopefully people do want to solve this problem. And I understand, like, there could be a management thing there, but we'll get into that. So how would you improve this? Well, obviously, one way you can do it is you can email us, and we do this kind of stuff when it comes to operations. So we'll come in and tell you how to do that. But, you know, whatever. A sales guy said I should put that slide in there. So that's one way. But the point of us having done this enough is that we have looked at it. And when we take over a system for somebody, a lot of times they will call us because things are on fire. And they basically say, like, well, you know, we're getting hundreds of alerts a day, and we don't know what to do with it. And so the first thing that we actually have to do so we can stay sane is figure out, like, well, how do we address that problem first, right? Because right now your alerting system isn't actually helping you. It's working against you. And so these are some of the things that we do. And I hope that everybody will sort of, you know, just think about what I'm going to walk through here. And hopefully it'll help you a little bit. I need to talk a little bit about terminology. All right. So you'll hear a lot of people say things, you know, like, measure all the things. You want metrics on everything, right? If it moves in your system, if you have a system running, you have to, like, measure everything. And if you don't, like, you're just a horribly bad person. Well, metrics in a sense, right? So we look at that in our term for that. That's anything which can be measured, right? That is like CPU. It is, you know, IOPS on a machine. It can be like network traffic. Basically, anything you can measure. And we generally do promote the idea that like you want to measure as many things as possible. Not that you want to alert on all these things, right? Like, don't confuse those two things. Metrics just means you want to have measurements on stuff. You want to have trending data on things. And it's primarily so you can go back and do some spelunking after the fact when you have a problem, right? So it's good to measure things, but if the only way you measure things is to have alerts, that's going to kill you. So don't do that. Keep those two ideas separate. Metrics is just data that you're measuring, you're collecting that in some system, and then you want the system to be able to do something based on that. It might be draw a graph, it might be throw an alert, could be something else, doesn't matter. Metrics is just collecting of that data, right? Graphs, we all know about. How many people here ever ran cacti? Yeah, it's all bad, right? That's why they do this conference like with a bar, like right, you know, 100 feet away from where the sessions are, specifically things like Nagios and cacti. So graphs are awesome, right? Like, again, graph all the things, that's fine. You want those trending systems in place to be able to go spot things and look for trouble, and that's all well and good, but again, it's a different purpose than what we're gonna talk about with alerting, right, and alert systems. Another important thing to have, and like these are our words, so you can use different ones if you want, the concept of a notice, right, where a notice is just sort of notification of event. It's not a big deal, right? You get like an email or maybe like a notice in Slack or something along those. It's sort of a non-critical informational piece of knowledge, right? And you need to have a word for what this is within your organization that is not actually tied to the concept of somebody getting an alert on their pager, right? Or somebody getting like an SMS on their phone. This is just sort of like information about the system that you may want to know about, right? But it is different from, hey, something's broken, please log into the system and start debugging, right? And then finally, the last one term that and again, I'm gonna use it in this way for this talk, alerts, which is basically the stuff that's waking you up, right? Some people refer to this as an alarm, that's fine, you know, whichever word works within your organization, but make sure you're all talking about the same things. Because we do have problems where when you're using one word and somebody's using something else, right, you can get a little bit of mismatch of like, somebody will say like, hey, put an alert on, you know, that software anytime this event happens. And you might think of that and say like, well, I don't want to get woken up just because the software like threw an exception or something, right? And you probably don't, but you might want to get an email about the fact that that happened, right? And that's totally a legit thing to want to have. So you just need to make sure that people understand like, what are we talking about? Like, which type of thing are we trying to collect, right? Are we just trying to get information? Or are we saying, nope, system's broken, somebody needs to react? Right, and so think of those words as a way to sort of frame conversation. And again, like the specific word doesn't necessarily matter because other organizations will have slightly different ones, but break it down into those types of categories for things that you're gonna talk about, right? Measure everything you can. In an ideal world, the system that you're using for doing these measurements will be able to do ad hoc graphs on all that collected data. You'll wanna be able to put informational emails to go out to non-wake-up sort of things, non-wake-up email addresses, right? But then have alerts for when something's actually broken, right? And most of what I'm gonna talk about now for the rest of the talk is gonna be alerts, so think of it in that sense, right? It is the actual stuff waking you up. So, how to improve alerts, right? It's pretty easy for people to just say, you know, alert on all kinds of stuff that doesn't actually matter. The thing that I've been doing a lot over the last few years as we've been building bigger systems and getting into more stuff, right, is really sort of trying to convince the folks that we're working with to really use the concept of systems thinking to apply to the systems that you're actually working on. It's sort of funny because it sounds like obvious, like, hey, we're building systems, like use systems thinking. But you have to really think of that in like sort of the totality of it, right? Don't think of it as like there's a computer sitting in a rack someplace and that's a system, right? Think of it as you have like an e-commerce platform which uses, you know, load balancers and caching machines and databases and web servers, like that whole thing comprises a system, right? And so thinking about how the whole thing is interacting and working together, you know, that's primarily the job of one, folks that are gonna get woken up about it, and then two, presumably your SRE team at the company that you're at, right? And you're take an idea of that sort of holistic view and think about it. And one of the things that I do when I think about alerts and why you want to have them in the system, I look at it as an alert is basically evidence that your system is behaving in a way that is outside of your existing understanding, right? And if you sort of start really thinking about that, repeat that a few times to yourself, so let that sink in a little bit. People have different ideas of what alerts are for, right? Pretty classic one, out of disk space, right? So people will set up a system, any computer that goes online, when it gets to 100% disk full, needs to page somebody and wake them up, right? So that's sort of, I don't even know if that's 101 level like alerting. Perhaps it's remedial alerting. But let's assume that you have a system like that. And the problem is that it's a fundamentally broken concept, because just because you run out of disk space doesn't actually mean that the service running on that machine is going to be broken, right? It really does depend on the type of service. We have web servers that run, you know, by the hundreds, and if they run out of disk space, it doesn't really matter, right? It will actually continue to serve requests. You know, it really depends on exactly how that disk full sort of happens that it could actually cause a problem. And even if it really caused a problem and the web server crashed, like, it falls out of the pool and, like, life continues on, right? So a disk full doesn't mean that you actually have to wake up necessarily. Now, on a database machine, there are certain you know, directories that those fill up and you can't write to those anymore. Well, yes, that actually is going to sort of destroy everybody's happy time. And so you have to sort of think about that, right? But when you start with building the system and putting it together, the initial idea is that it's all going to work the way that you expect it's going to, right? And the alert should really only be there for when it starts behaving in a way that is now unexpected, right? If you assume that a machine is going to keep working when the disk is 100% full, you don't really need to alert on that, right? That's not the kind of thing that you should have an alert for. You really want to start thinking about, like, well, if that machine goes down, even though the disk is full, now it's working in a way that I didn't expect, because I would have expected it to keep going, right? And so maybe there's the where you start to think about having an alert. So bring this idea to other groups within your organization, right, that first off, alerting is really only for when we don't understand how the system is reacting anymore, right? And that creates a nice boundary to put everything else inside of. Because as long as you understand how it's going to work, you don't necessarily have to get woken up, right? That 100% disk full, a lot of people like to do alerts at like 80% full, right? So now it's like, oh, well, I'm going to find out before the systems die anyways. Well, again, at 80% full, no system is actually going to stop working. So you shouldn't really even alert on that. That you might send a notice on, right? Because you might want to know that your system's gotten to 80%. And one of the things that we'll do a lot of times is we'll do like projections on when do we think the server is going to run out of disk space, right? And so then we'll put it out at like 80 or 90% or somewhere, or we'll set up a notice within our system to like, well, it shouldn't run out of space for 6 months. So like 3 months from now, send a notice, an email to somebody, so during the day they can go in and look and say like, hey, does that projection still make sense, right? And you can sort of set up those boundaries, because again, that's all working within the expected way that the system is going to work, right? And when people start to come at you and wonder about alerts and what are you doing, this is the kind of thing that you want to be able to say, well, we understand how the system is supposed to work, so we're setting up boundaries and tolerances based on that, right? The other thing that you need to do in order to approve alerts, and this is one where I think people have a lot of problems, you really have to put some of these things in the context that your business actually cares about. And I know like most engineers don't really like talking to business people. That's fine, you don't have to necessarily talk to them, but on some level you're gonna have to communicate with them in some way. I guess get them on Slack and then you can type to them, and that seems to make everybody be able to talk to each other. I don't exactly know why, but mostly seems to work. So we can't talk to each other face to face, but if you can type messages back and forth, like, that's good. So when I talk about putting this in terms of what the business cares about, I will say that I obviously care whether my folks get woken up at 2 in the morning, but perhaps not all businesses actually care about that kind of thing. So ask a question like this. When somebody comes to you and says, like, we're putting up a new service, or we're going to have, you know, we need to monitor it, and what do we want to do? The first question to kind of ask is, what is the business impact of this alert, right? Anything that you're going to put an alert on, right, you're saying, well, this is going to go out of bounds for what we understand the system and how it's supposed to work, so what is the business impact of that, right? And it's a great question because it really sort of puts some onus on people to justify what the point of the alert is, right? And if you can't justify that there's an actual business impact, well, you probably really don't need that alert. and people ought to know the answer to this, right? People other than you should know the answer to this question, right? If they can't answer that there's a business impact, again, sort of weakens the case for like why this needs to be waking you up. The other big question that you need to ask is, what's the remediation for this alert, right? There's a lot of cases where people are putting alerts on systems that they didn't write the code for, they've never seen how it works before, they don't even necessarily know what it does, right? Like maybe it's a shopping cart, so you're like, conceptually, I've shopped on a website before, so I think I know how that works. But the way that they've written the code, like you have no idea, right? So asking that question, what is the remediation for this alert, it starts to open up really interesting answers. Because a lot of times they'll say like, oh, well, you know, if that service goes down, first you look for a core file, then like, you know, try to get a stack trace. And then you immediately have a context for a conversation of, does everybody on the SRE team know how to use GDB, right? Maybe they don't, in which case we have an issue there, right? Are we expected to, if we can get a stack trace, right, just because we can get a stack trace doesn't mean we actually know where does the code for this live? Can I actually go in and read the code, right? Even if I could figure out where it was pointing to that it failed, doesn't necessarily mean I would understand how the code's gonna work, which then means if that's the remediation, who am I gonna call, right? I gotta be able to call somebody or get a hold of some resource that can actually look at this stuff and debug it, right? Does everybody on the team have the skills to debug this? Just because somebody knows C, right, or somebody knows Perl, or somebody thinks they knows Ruby, doesn't necessarily mean that you'll understand like the monkey patched mess that's running in production that's gonna like throw some error out at you, right? And if you're gonna have it as an alert where any random person on the team might get woken up with that, right, that's a skill that everybody needs to have, or you need to know who can I call when this thing breaks, and then who do I call when that person doesn't wake up, right? Like, you can start to have that conversation, and it's a kind of a sneaky way for some people to get the idea of like developers actually being somewhat responsible for the things that they're putting into production, because you sort of can make the rational argument of like, well, if the only way to fix this is to start reading code and probably patch it, do you really want the ops people, right, doing that? Do you really want someone who's never written any of this code doing that? Like, we can, but probably that's not what you want. And that sort of opens up those conversations, right? And that's what you really want, because you really need organizational support for some of the software that you're gonna end up running. And this works for like anytime you're bringing in a new service, right? Are you doing like a new data storage or something like that, introducing a new language? You wanna be able to ask these two questions again, you know, what's the impact of the business? And what's the remediation for this alert, right? It's new software, nobody's ever run it. There's gotta be one person who's advocating for it. Are they the person we're gonna call, right? Like that's the person. So when you start asking those two questions, right, you'll still get alerts into production. You'll probably have old ones. What we often see is like, well, people start to ask these questions, but you still got perhaps hundreds or more that don't actually make any sense. So how do you actually address that sort of, you know, you get an alert, you're not sure what to do with it kind of thing. And so this is kind of quick guidelines on what you should do with an alert as it comes in, right? So once the alert's been dealt with, right, presumably you've got it fixed or worked around or whatever, step one is like summarize what the problem was, right? So like web server crashing, like I had to restart the service, boom, it's good. What was done to solve the problem, right? Service restarted, whatever. Who was notified? Like in most cases, if you've already answered what's the business impact, as a part of that, you also have a notification tree for, you know, here's the people that have to be told that this thing went down, whether it's customers, right? Maybe you have to update like Twitter or something like that, or it's other internal stakeholders that need to know, hey, the service was out for a while. And can this be prevented? It's an important question that often gets overlooked. And most things you'll find, like if it breaks once, like there's a pretty good chance it could break again. So you wanna go in and look and see like, hey, how would you prevent this if you could? And often preventing things is not a thing that the SRE team can do itself. So, you know, you gotta get, again, development back in on that loop. When you do this, so you run through this, and I would say, send the answers to those questions to everyone on the team every time, right? And sure, when you have like 100 alerts a day, like I understand people probably aren't going to do that, but at least like in aggregate, you start attacking the problem, right? And this sort of allows you to start collecting information on what the alerts are and how to start fixing them. I also would say that as you're writing this stuff down, right, you need to link to this documentation from your alerting system. And there's, you know, different ways you can do that. If you have an alerting system where it'll include the link of like, hey, here's the alert. And when you build the alert in your system, right, have a space for like, go here on the wiki and you can see what this is about, should include like, here's when it breaks, here's the escalation tree, like here's what it's about, and have that information readily at hand. You don't wanna go like, I'm pretty sure I read about that someplace in the wiki like 3 months ago when they put service up at 2 a.m, right? Like you just like put the link in there, so this is where the information is, right? This gives you knowledge transfer on the team, right? Because a lot of times these things will break and whoever fixed it might know how they fixed it and why they fixed it. But if they did it, you know, on a Saturday night, by the time the week rolls around, nobody else is really paying attention because they got other things going on. And you want to make sure this knowledge gets transferred so that whoever's on call next would see that. You're going to expose gaps, obviously, in your infrastructure and in the systems that you're running by having these emails go out. And again, patterns will start to emerge, right? You'll start to see, like, you know, we've seen sort of those persistent problems where it's like, it's a simple, quick fix. Maybe somebody's like restarting a web server and they do it like twice in a week when they're on call, and then the next person does it twice in a week. And then, like, pretty soon, as long as you have these emails going around, you're like, you're flooding that communication, right? Those patterns will emerge. So like, why are we all doing this? Like, at some point, we should realize somebody needs to fix this. We also use this for figuring out how to prune alerts from the system, right? Like, perhaps you have too many. You probably already have more than what you need. One, if you can't determine the business impact of an alert, like, you probably don't need it, right? It's pretty hard to argue that you need an alert on a system that doesn't really have any business impact. And if you can't find one, convert it to an email, have it send you, let you know that that happened. See if you can find one. Again, ones where there's no remediation necessary, right? If you're just like, I wait 10 minutes, it clears itself. Not the kind of thing you need to wake up for. If you don't actually have to tell anyone that something has broken, like, that's also a pretty good indicator that probably you didn't have to actually wake up to fix it. Usually if something's important, people want to be told. And then also, like, if workarounds are available, right? If there's other ways to sort of deal with the issue rather than being woken up and manually going in and fixing it, definitely another flag for like possible bad alert. I drill this into people all the time because they tend to forget or just ignore it. But if you can't fix it, you don't actually need to wake up for it, right? So before people start saying, like, you're going to get alerts on, you know, whatever, core files from some Erlang process, if nobody on your team can actually debug Erlang, like, good for them. They haven't had to deal with that. But also, like, you probably don't need to wake up for it, right? Depending on how the structure is of your company. The other thing also is, like, if it can wait till morning, right, you also don't need to wake up for it, right? So again, this is one of those, like, server fills up, web server fills up with data, like, has no space on it. It's either going to drop out of the pool or it's going to keep running, and in either of those cases, there's no business impact, so why wake up for it? You can fix it at 10 o'clock just as you could at 2 o'clock, and you'll be fine, right? If you happen to find a bad alert, oh, my Lord, it happens. You know, the ideal would be to actually remove the alert. Like, that'd be my first recommendation. Sometimes that is a little bit dangerous, right? Sometimes people don't really know for sure whether that's safe to do. So then I always say, like, convert that alert to a notice, right? And so, like, you're still going to see that it's happening, and you can still collect some data on the fact that it has happened. In an ideal world, you'll have a monitoring system that you can actually pipe alerts into, and it'll, like, put, like, sort of notices on your graphs of, like, here's when alerts happened in the system. And if you have that, that's great, because then you can go back and correlate it with your graph data. But that's sort of the next thing, right? Convert that alert to a notice. And then, you know, another option, which is crazy, actually implement fixes. I know some of you are like, well, that's never going to happen. But, you know, it's a little bit, it's an ideal world. We're here at a conference in sunny California. We can talk about, like, people would actually fix the things that are broken. So since those things are hard, though, it is hard to actually get people to fix their code. You know, so my pro tip is, like, don't let people add alerts into the system unless they can answer these questions about what's the business impact, right, and what's the steps for remediation. And actually, what tends to be pretty useful is that in most systems that I've seen, usually the only people who can really add alerts into a system are the actual operators of that, and most SRE teams that I've seen are pretty good at not letting anybody add those in there. And so if you just sort of tell people, like, here's the two things. When you want me to add an alert for your software you put in production, just answer those two questions and send it over, and we'll add it in there for you. And then, like, you sort of put some onus back on the other people. It's like, oh, you couldn't answer those, right? Or if they give you bad answers of, like, we don't know what the business impact is, and you're like, well, then we don't really need to alert on it, right? Like, it's, I admit this is partially an organizational issue, right? Obviously, you're going to get pressured to put alerts on systems anyways. Most people really aren't going to ask you about ones on like CPU, you know, or load average or whatever. They're probably going to assume that those are in place, and you can just kind of know that they don't need to be, and everybody's happy. If you actually get into a debate about it, again, you can fall back to the questions of business impact, right? What is the business impact of load equals 4 on a machine? Probably nothing, right? Like, and part of that is a mind shift, right, of what are you actually alerting on? You don't really care that the load is 4. What you might care is that, hey, suddenly orders that used to process in like, you know, half a second now take like 4 seconds to answer, right? So don't put an alert on load average. Put the alert on time to process orders, right? Put it on something that actually does have a business impact, because we know that will make a difference. If you think about it, right, there is sort of this thought exercise that goes around that we tell people, especially as they're building out new systems, that if you were to launch a website today and you put your site up, right, you really only need one alarm to go off, and that is if the site is down, right? What else do you actually really care about, right? Because there's no other alert that you could tell me is important that I said, well, if the site was still up, would you care, right? And that basically washes away everything else. Now, obviously, as your site gets more complex, like there'll be more of those cases, but if you start with that basic premise of like, I really only care if the site is up, you know, it's a good place to start. We had one customer who framed this really well because we would do alerting on things that didn't really matter. It was almost like he taught us a little bit. And this was his statement, right? Like, I don't care if the servers are on fire as long as I'm still making money, right? Because like we would have alerts on like CPU, like temperature, right? Temperature of the machines and whatnot. Like, is it getting too hot in the rack and that kind of stuff? And we would tell him, we're like, oh, you know, we see that the temperature graphs are like going off the charts and you really got to do something. And he's like, why do I care? Like, if I'm still making money, it doesn't matter. And he had a point to that, right? And so we started graphing, like, here's orders through the system. Here's how much money that's going up in revenue. And so then anything we wanted to get him to fix, if you could correlate it to, hey, your revenue just dropped, like, now he cares, right? We've got the business person now on our side saying, yes, this actually matters. And I mean, I will say, like, I've been in technical support, and I've had machines apparently on fire when you're talking to people over the phone, and that's a really weird place to be in. But like, until the machine stops working, like, people are like, oh, is it supposed to make that smell? It seems to be working okay. Like, I mean, I've had that quoted to me when I was doing tech support. It was crazy. But the machine dies, and like, now the business is impacted right now. They care. One of the issues I find with a lot of folks who are doing an ops role, and this is kind of dangerous, is that people tend to want to actually be proactive, right? They don't like to be reactive. And this is one where, depending on your place within the organization, like, you kind of have to make a stand and watch out for this. Because if you don't, like, people will actually do the wrong thing, right? They want to alert on leading indicators. They want to be paged and woken up when the machine gets to 80% disk space left. And it's kind of a ridiculous idea because it really doesn't matter if it's at 80%, right? Like, that's not going to break anything, but they want to know so they can go in and fix it before something bad happens. And you really have to push back on this idea. There's a show I like, and they're sort of like this little montage that they do at the beginning of the show, where it's like there's an operator who's like, oh, you know, I just got to make sure we don't get hit again, right? And the boss is like, well, you know, someone's looking out for us. I'm glad you're looking out for us. And she's like, I'm serious. Like, I missed something one time before, right? And I can't let that happen again. This bad thing happened. And he's like, it was 10 years ago. Like, everybody missed it. Like, it's fine. You know, and they're like, yeah, everyone's not me, right? Like, it's their responsibility. I don't know if anybody knows what this is from. It's like from Homeland, if you've ever watched that show. And the gal in the show, Carrie, is like, let's see, mentally unstable is a good word, I think, to use for that. Because she takes it so seriously, the job of like, if anything bad happens, it's on me, right? And I have to watch everything 24/7, and if anything gets by, like, I'm gonna put that on my own shoulders. And that kind of thing will like cause you to break down, like you can't handle that. So little true story time, I always like true stories. True story, bro. So we're working with a customer, site went down. They were monitoring for 200 response codes. So that's like 101 level, right? Like, not just is the site up, but is it actually throwing a 200? So that's good. Wasn't 404-ing. But the way they were monitoring, right, there's another aspect of that is like, if you look to see if it's a 200 and then you stop getting responses, the last thing you saw was a 200. So maybe your monitoring isn't quite what you wanted it to be. So this sort of happened, and people were called, and like, oh, the site's down, and they went in, and they looked, and like, oh, the web server was down, so they just restarted the web server. Now it's back up, it's doing 200s. And you're like, well, that's easily fixed. It's very reactive. So, but now you've got the site back up and working. So, of course, people start digging around, so they're like, well, that's kind of weird that the site just stopped working in the middle of the day. And in this case in particular, because the monitoring system didn't catch it, right, and like it was customer called up and said, hey, the site's broken. So people start digging into this. And which is, I think, hilarious that my example was also out of memory because I've seen so many talks here talk about the friggin' killer in Linux, which I just don't like. That's the nice way to say that. So in this case, amazingly, the root cause, right, root cause was the killer. And so then people were like, well, you know what we ought to do? Like, anytime killer goes off, like, we should throw an alert on that because that should never happen, right? Like, this server is just like a web server. Like, it does its services. Killer should never get involved in this picture. We should alert on that. And I think, like, people were getting ready to, like, go add that into the system. And I'm like, wait a minute. Killer is not going to consistently cause outages, right? Like, there's a little bit of, like, random bad luck that you're going to need to have for this to break, especially on web servers. Right, like on database servers, it seems like random is a lot worse. But on web servers, like you really need a certain kind of bad luck for this to cause a problem. And you know, people are like, well, okay, I guess that makes sense. Maybe we shouldn't do it on every situation. And again, it's sort of like if you were to have done that, you know you're going to get a crap ton of false positives, right? Because it's going to go off in cases that don't matter. And in most cases, like that service might restart anyways. It was just kind of weird that it didn't. And we know that like false alarms are bad. I sort of seem to have this debate still. One of the earlier talks I saw mentioned like there's a bunch of research, a lot of it in the medical field, which talks about false alarms and why they're bad. I've read a number of these. Like I like this is sort of a money quote out of one of them, right? In an intensive care unit, alarms are used to call attention to a patient, to alert a change in a patient's physiology, or to warn of a failure in a medical device. However, up to 94% of the alarms are false. That's kind of a scary thought in and of itself, because you're kind of like, especially like the more you know about like alert fatigue and that kind of thing, where you're like, so if I'm in the hospital and 94% of the things that go off on my machine, right, that's monitoring me as a person are false, like what are the chances that the nurses are going to react with urgency, like when an alert goes off and they need to come in here, right? Like, and eventually at some point at 2 a.m. on a 12-hour shift, like somebody would be like, oh yeah, that thing's going off again. Let me go down and mosey on in there. All those movies that I see where, like, you're like, oh, the person's, like, smothering the other person to death, and it, like, takes them, like, 10 minutes, and you're like, where are the nurses and whatnot? And now I know this is where they are. They're like, well, that alarm's gone off, like, 15 times already, so I'll get down there. Like, I'm going to do my rounds, but I'll get down there eventually and check it out. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a scary thought, so, like, I approach all scary things with a little bit of humor. We know, like, we teach ourselves, like, culturally, not just this culture, but, like, every culture, right? My favorite study on, like, having too many alerts and, like, sort of becoming blind to that idea, there's this guy called Aesop, and, like, he studied alert systems a long time ago, right? And he wrote the seminal paper on it, which was called The Boy Who Cried Wolf. And so basically he did this research where he would go from town to town, and they were all sheep herding towns, and he would find a little young boy, and he would tell him, he would say, okay, you're watching the sheep. I want you to run to town and tell everybody there's a wolf in the field and then see what they do. And like they'd all get a big reaction, and the boy thought it was a lot of fun. So he'd do that for like 2 or 3 days, right? And then see, and he'd mark, he'd take his notes down and make sure, oh, yep, they always react the same way. And about the 3rd or 4th day into that, what he would do is he would actually unleash a wolf into the herd of sheep. And again, he jotted his notes down and the boy would get eaten because everybody was like, we know this isn't true, right? Okay, it wasn't actually, I don't have scientific data that he approached it in that way. I don't know of double blind results for that, but I feel pretty confident like that story came from somewhere, right? Like, and we've been telling everybody this story for thousands of years, like it's a thing. And so remind people of this if they need to be reminded. Anyways, back to my thing. So could we send notices of an out-of-memory situation, right? Rather than waking somebody up to let them know, you could send notices, and that would actually be kind of interesting, because you're like, if I came into work one day, and I saw that I had gotten 15 emails about out-of-memory going off on machines, like, I might be, you know, sort of heightened to go look at those systems and see what's going on. Again, the impossible dream, fix the cause of the out of memories, you know, that was an idea. It did get tossed. I mean, like, seriously, legitimately, it was discussed as a potential option that was then brought to the developers and rejected. So that's definitely an option, again, to fix it. Or how about making a useful alert? Haha, that was an interesting idea. We came up with a hypothetical useful alert, right? So if you have out-of-memory issues, you could actually write a script that checks to see how memory is doing on these given services, right, on these nodes. It could restart the app whenever it looked like you were about to run out of memory and see if that solved the problem. If restarting the app server itself didn't solve the problem, which is where you think it is, right, you could actually go look for an offending process based on memory consumption, actually kill that process. Since we know these are sort of web services that are running, like in this particular case, we really don't care about any other system that is running on there. Like, it's supposed to do web services, and if there's some other process on there out of, you know, maybe cron is acting up again, you could probably kill that and be fine. Your logs wouldn't get rotated for like a day or something, but we would get a notice, and so we would know. We thought, like, well, we could actually take this to the extreme, and we could actually just spin up an entire new node and kill the old one. And we felt really sure that if we were to do that, like, the out-of-memory thing should be resolved in some level, because now that machine isn't there anymore. But if you went through, like, whatever series of steps that you thought, like, well, here's what I would do if I was going to wake up and handle this, and it's all scriptable, so I could actually do all these things. And then somewhere in that process, like, if I still have this alert going off, like, maybe then I should wake something up, right? Like, and say, hey, people, like, there's something going on here. Because we now have sort of gotten past the sort of normal expectations, right? That would make for a useful alert, because now you're actually saying, like, look, we've done the basics here, right? We've done sort of the simple manual remedial steps. We do actually need a person to come in and debug the system, right? Thinking back to that exercise of, if you had a website, you really only need one alert, right? Like, you just need to know, is that site still up? Like, you don't actually care how many times out of memory goes off as long as the site's still up, right? It's definitely a problem that we see that all too often, right? And this is sort of, think about how your organization is using you, and that sounds awful, but it should. A lot of people say they want 24/7, right? Like, that's the everything, unless you're like Amazon's SLA. It's like 24/7, like 100% uptime is like the way that it goes, and that's awesome. If you actually need software that's going to run 24/7, can never go down, right? Like, then you really need to design resiliency into the software, right? And what we tend to do instead is we try to use human intervention as the stopgap for that resiliency problem, right? And that is, again, a fundamentally wrong way to approach building an entire system, right? Thinking from all the machines together and the people who are working on it and the customers who are trying to use it. It's a backwards approach to doing that. Human intervention is not a good stopgap for resiliency because humans are just as fallible as machines, right? Probably even more so, although don't tell the AIs that because, you know, trouble ensues. Also remember, thinking does not scale, right? Especially at 2 a.m. So no matter, like, maybe there's one person who would say, like, I actually could do this better than the machine, and I don't mind getting woken up at 2 a.m. because I was playing Eve until 1:45 anyways, and I haven't hit REM sleep, so it's cool, just wake me up. Like, that kind of knowledge, like, cannot be retained by a large group of people, right? Even if you have the one hero who's going to solve the problems. You can't build a team of those people because they just don't get along well enough. I've seen it before. You'd like to believe it could be done. And you have to make that system easier for folks, right? You have to have those links in your documentation that point out from your alerts and get all that together. Especially at 2 a.m., right? Like, put it under stress, whatever your time is. Some people, like, I often stay up till 2 a.m., so, like, maybe it's 4 a.m., but whatever, right? Like, overnight, at some point, people need to sleep, systems need to relax. You cannot have that going on forever, or they will eventually burn out. So take what I've said, business impact, right, remediation items, start there, work that tree, and get rid of some of those alerts. That's my spiel. Thanks, everybody. I believe I have time for questions. I'll also note, I will post the slides. You can follow me on the Twitters. And I'll be at this conference that I run called Surge, so you can find more there. If anyone has questions about awarding or whatnot, or you know, you can ask now, or if you need to just gripe about how your boss gives you too many alerts and it's all horrible, like we can do that at said bar that's not far away from here. So, any questions? If I heard that correctly, and I don't think that I did, what do I think about dumping? Yep. Absolutely. They might. So he's basically asking, like, in the case that you can't actually get the answer to the what's the remediation item, right? So to me, like, now you do have an organizational issue. I do think it's easy to say, it's a reasonable question if you have to go to management and say, you're putting a new service in and we don't know how to fix it. And we've asked the developers how to fix it in the case of some failure that they've said it will fail, right? And they have not given us an answer. As far as we know, there is no way to fix it. So what we can do is we can tell you that it is down, but we don't have a way to fix it, and development won't give us one, right? Like, it does sort of create some management pressure to go back on them if that's sort of the nature of the relationship. I would argue that actually, if they haven't told you, if they're saying, like, it can fail in this way and there's no known fix, like, the alert probably doesn't have to go to wake anyone up. It just needs to be a notice that goes out to an email address to everyone who cares to say, hey, that thing broke in the way that people said could not be fixed, right? And that will, I mean, eventually, if it's a thing that matters, and maybe the answer is, right, if there's a large business impact on that first question, that won't really be an acceptable answer for the second one, right? If there's no business impact on the first one, it can stay down until the next morning and people can look at it. So, but I definitely, like, for me, and obviously it depends on the organization. Some organizations are large enough where you can have pagers for developers and whatnot. Other ones aren't so much. We do tell all of our development staff, like, when you put stuff in production, anyone who's going to be on an alert, right, and is going to be on call will have phone numbers for everybody, and they will call you if your software breaks. So I would strongly suggest you don't give them software that's going to break, right? And so mostly that's just sort of dependent on the organization and what your size is and how that interaction goes. But certainly you want to push that back on the developers because they're the ones generally who can actually fix it. So hopefully that answers that. Yep. Any other questions? All right. We're done then. Thanks, everyone.